with holding all factors constant, we expect to gain a formal extra one that will take us to 13, plus one who has played around. So about 14 members will be holding UPC party cards in the next assembly. That makes us the third largest political party. And if you consider that NRA is not a political party and NUP is there, then we are effectively the third largest political party, and so therefore the political organization of repute. But in terms of Betty and Jimmy, it's unfortunate, but I mean, they've served in those houses for a bit of time, but they don't represent IPC's interests. But whatever happens, just unfortunate that Betty, in going to Lira, has made us lose Oyam one seat, and just unfortunate that my good friend Maxwell, in leaving Maruzi to go to Apache, has made us lose another seat. But that's not a subject for today's conversation. UPC is on the rise. We just need to be able to sort out this year, make sure that we sort out an official president who can challenge Ofwono Pondo's president on issues, you know, and then the future will be the Republic of Uganda, in which all of us come together to rebuild.
Moses Berahanga is here, and he's consulting with figures, so we shall see about the 13 and 14 MPs that you have. I last checked, you had something like 6 or 7 or 8.
10. Okay. If you see, yeah, 10.
Yeah, of course. They moved from 9 in the current parliament to 10, but the good thing is, Ocheno challenging him, Jimmy. But all those members of parliament are from Jimmy's backyard, not from your backyard. So please,
it
is Jimmy delivering those, not
right.
I know you have been
once in a while, but have you been on the campaign trail as well?
Thank you, Oscar. It's been a very long week for us newsmen and women, we who get out there to gather information and turn it to the public. Myself and the producer of this show, Patricia, we always meet ourselves in the trenches of real journalism, and it's a pleasure being here. But also, most importantly, this week I celebrated my 32nd birthday. So my friends, the gangsters, you welcome you. I welcome your gifts.
Congratulations, Derek Wandera. You hadn't realized how such a young man you are, but
I didn't know he was Gen Z.
I'm turning 50 in November, so I may soon be representing the elder alike.
No. Edgar Tabaro,
we are being exposed, me and you.
You're soon addressing Ofwono Pondo as Honorable Ofwono Pondo. So, Honorable Ofwono Pondo, you're most welcome to the Capital Gang this morning.
Thank you, Oscar.
I've not seen you look so relaxed as of today.
Yeah, having won my seat.
Yeah.
Having got the president to win his seat with increased percentage. And NRM rounding off all the regions of Uganda.
Has made you relax.
Hilarious.
Have you got some coins left in the pocket?
NRM never. Even when he's modest, I always have some money.
Right.
Yeah.
So we have a guest. He's a regular guest, especially when we want to talk about business. Mr. John Kakunguru Walugembe, you're most welcome.
Thank you,
to
Oscar.
The Capital Gang. Yes,
it's a pleasure. It's always a pleasure joining the Capital Gang and discussing issues that deal with the business world, the economy, and the financial sector in general.
I saw you cruising in, driving on into Capital Radio, and I saw the gains you're protecting.
Kakunguru Walugembe. Kakunguru Walugembe are imperial names.
And you know, these are just men things to ask you about.
These are the bright children of the collaborators.
John Kakunguru Walugembe. Is that motor vehicle? Is it electric? It sounded really, really. It was purring and.
Yeah, it's a good one.
It's a good one. So I felt, let's get that out of the way. But John Kakunguru Walugembe, you in business, when these Ofwono Pondos were winning, they have bad manners.
Yeah.
How do you switch off the internet for 5 days?
Yeah.
And then you have, you wish the economy to go sweet. Mm-hmm. How can that happen? So what did we lose in the time they switched off the internet?
Okay, so for some time, we've been encouraging business people, particularly after COVID, to go digital. And in fact, what you see is that many businesses are now operating in a cashless manner. If you go to petrol stations, if you go to businesses, most people don't pay cash, using cash anymore. So that, in our view, has actually been a good thing. Because
there's IFRIS as well.
There's also IFRIS, so it's basically pushing the economy towards more formality. You're creating a track record and so on and so forth. So when we got to, you know, there was a first letter that indicated that the internet would be switched off around the 6th or 7th of January, and it was swiftly denied. And so we got the confidence that this wouldn't happen. And then on the 13th of January, the internet was switched off with a 2-hour notice. Now, a study has been done to look at the, what countries lose when they switch off the internet. And it has been found that for highly connected nations, they lose between $23 million to $25 million per 10 million people every time they switch off the internet. And for countries that are slightly less digitized, they can lose roughly between $10 to $15 million per 10 million people. Now, if you, that's now a general study, but if you look at the daily transactions that go through mobile money, about 16 million transactions, between 425 to 525 billion per day going through mobile money alone. If you look at what the telecoms have reported as losses since the internet was switched off, something around 24 billion lost as data costs, particularly because people are not able to use data and so on. So these are huge figures, and one may wonder, you know, why are we paying this cost? And from the business perspective, just to make it clear, we are not saying the internet shouldn't be switched off. Sometimes we think that we should be more transparent with regard to the threat, you know, we because we are all, we all want to know what is
what
the justification.
Yeah.
Yeah, you may not give us the details, but at the very least, you need to condition us to appreciate the level of threat.
These
so
days
that
we even want the details.
So that we accept, you know, we accept the pain because it's us. At the end of the day, we're going to bear this pain. But if it's blanket, you know, it's a security issue, then it kind of is
and
something
then,
we can't go further.
So URA also was not getting money. Because
URA
if you
was
think about on this table we have Moses,
URA was very smart.
Derek Wandera, myself, we get salaries.
Yeah.
And we're supposed to do a pay a return. Oh no, Moses doesn't pay tax. But Wandera and my
he's an industrialist.
Ah,
yeah, mega milk, mega
government person.
From my salary, I pay tax.
Ah, okay. And it's supposed to be remitted.
4.9 million.
Okay.
Oh, he earns very big, 4.9 million.
Yeah.
He's distorting
30%
the per capita income here.
So, John, the deadline for that pay.
No, URA was very smart. And in fact, if maybe because what URA did is that it asked taxpayers to file and pay. You know, the return is due on the 15th.
Yeah.
But then they pushed it to the 12th. Without giving a reason. So I think as soon as they got information, that
then you can't be penalized if you don't turn 12, because the day is 15, and they cannot tell you by radio that we've changed to 12.
No, the issue, I mean,
yeah.
No, the issue with URA is that URA is kind of a lottery itself many times, so you can't. It's not like you say, I won't pay this or I won't pay that. It will just sit on your ledger and then that's it.
No, we shall pay when they open
So my view, therefore, is that if, and I'm looking at two scenarios, if the intelligence was direct and it showed the threat to the security of the country and that there would be harm to the economy over a long period of time, then probably it was justified to close down the internet. But It should have been handled differently. We should have been conditioned to appreciate the threat. We should have been given time to adjust. You know, there are people that...